Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish the book I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download it and listen to. Joining me today is Juliana.
Hello everyone.
And we're just discussing, what were we discussing? Can't even remember. Should we get straight on with the episode?
Let's go.
Oh yeah, I was just
ahead.
Saying that Coco Gauff pronounced my name wrong because there's now a tennis player called Jodie Burridge. It used to be if you typed Burridge into Google, I'd be pretty high up on the list of Burridges.
Yeah.
And now, whoa, all the way down. Wow, there's a tennis player who's, I mean, only ranked in the top 100 or top 150 or something.
But she makes appearances.
Playing on the main court in the Australian Open. And suddenly I was watching the commentary and people were, and they're all saying, Burridge is doing this, Burridge that. And I've never heard my name said so often, which it isn't about me. I know that's so weird to say that. Like, but you've got the name Kunzendorf. You've never heard the name Kunzendorf except for your own name, really.
Well, there's an actress in Germany with the same second name.
Yes, but you don't. There's no commentary on what she's doing. So they're
don't
like,
think so.
Gauff is doing this. Burridge is serving really well. Burridge had a meltdown at the end of the first set. Anyway. Let's get on with it. Should we get on with today's episode?
Yes. What's the book?
Well, I've been doing the SFBRP. If I go there, find the must reads list. If you know what I mean, not the must read. Yeah, this is a must read list. It's like the masterworks, SFBRP masterworks. And the way that they're arranged here is chronologically. So it goes like this: The Time Machine from 1895, mm-hmm. The War of the Worlds, you know. Mm-hmm. Most authors don't get more than two books, or most authors only get one book. A few authors get two books, and I think War of the World and The Time Machine is good. Then it goes George Orwell, 1984, and then 1949 is Earth Abides by George R. Stewart.
Okay.
So this is like the fourth oldest book.
Yes, pretty old.
Pretty old.
Yeah.
And in a world where I'm also reviewing books that came out in 2024 or 2025, it's interesting to go back and check out books from before science fiction really knew what science fiction was.
Okay. Would you say this book is science fiction?
It is definitely science fiction.
Okay.
It is not just science fiction. It is like formative science fiction in that it's one of the closest books that's written to like the Second World War and like nuclear apocalypse or whatever. It isn't nuclear apocalypse, but it's like one of those first books which like posits, well, not one of the first books. There's many other books that do this, which kill everybody off.
Yeah.
In fact, let me forget what I was saying about nuclear stuff, but it's definitely a post-World War II, what if everybody dies kind of situation.
Okay.
And there's only a few people left alive, which then it became the way into that was then like post-apocalyptic, you know, like there's a lot of, you know, Cold War anxiety in this one as well. And this book set the mold for so many other books, you know, like The Stand by Stephen King and lots of others. This is one of those foundational works of post-apocalypse. Everybody's died except for a few people. And what happens after the apocalypse?
Right.
And in this case, it's a disease that goes around.
So like 28 days later.
Yeah, kind of, but without the zombies.
Okay.
Because one of these other ones, the book after this is 1951, The Day of the Triffids.
Yes.
Which again is very much in this mold. Everybody dies. How do you survive? And they, you know, add other plants and stuff as well.
Yeah.
1954, I Am Legend. Another, everybody is dead. Mm. How do you, you
I
know.
I need
like
to survive.
So there's this, it is this kind of group of books here of Earth Abides, Day of the Triffids, I Am Legend. And then, you know, later on it goes into other versions of this, like The Stand, and even up to what was that one which is the Station 11, you know, and the other, like the pandemic books that have been written recently.
Yeah.
Well, that was a pandemic book written before the pandemic.
Like World War Z?
World War Z? No, that's much more like straight zombie stuff.
Okay,
so that's not like everybody's dead and now we're kind of trying to keep civilization going or rebuild our lives after the apocalypse.
Yeah. Okay.
That's much more of a like, we have to run away from zombies. Again, in the vein of Day of the Triffids and 28 Days Later and these other kind of stuff. So yes, adjacent to everyone's dead except a few people, and then it's sort of like plus zombies plus plants plus whatever, you know.
Just a thought that came to my head, like the Three Californias. That
yes, one that, of those is very much like yeah, that as well. Yeah, you know, yeah. Again, that's a little bit more like there's an apocalypse and not everybody's died.
Yeah,
but because that's a nuclear apocalypse, so oh, all okay. the cities are gone. Right. But there's lots of these small towns and people do survive in small towns and make communities, okay. but they're kind of disparate and spread out. So yeah, I think the books I'm trying to say is like everybody's dead, but there's only like two to three to four people still alive.
On the entire Earth?
No, that know each that, oh, that no, they're in range no, of, each, of other. Each other. So okay. yeah. It's like, if you meet somebody else, is it a surprise?
Yeah.
And do you have to be worried about meeting other people? Mm-hmm. And yeah, that is what happens in a lot of these books. And a mm-hmm. lot of the drama comes from somebody turns up and you don't know what they want and you mm-hmm. don't know what their history is. Mm-hmm. Same thing happens in this book. So
okay.
what happens is that our main character... who I will now actually just instead of trying to remember
ish,
it,
ish,
yes, it's
Ish.
Ish,
Nish.
So no, often it actually says things here as well. If you look for book details, it'll say characters. Isherwood Williams.
Mm.
And then there's Emma Williams and Joey Williams, like other Williams mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. people.
Okay.
So Isherwood Williams is bitten by a rattlesnake.
Okay.
And at the same time, a worldwide plague pandemic, extreme pandemic breaks out and everybody dies, but he like survives from his rattlesnake bite. And at the same time, that kind of inoculates him in the immediate after effect of, or the immediate effect of being, and he's also is a geologist. So he was out on a field trip.
Right.
And so he's up in the mountains, the Sierra Mountains of California or whatever it was.
Okay.
And so he comes back and he's like, oh, this town is a bit empty. And he goes through and there's nobody there. Oh, where's all the cars gone? You know, and it's all about like discovering that everybody's dead. Like he's the only person that he meets.
Wow.
And then he gets back to his home and he gets back to his, you know, his childhood home and his parents' home. And and, you know, buries his parents or whatever it is. Again, like there's lots of people who die. And then really the book is... about him. Well, it's kind of like there's three sections of the book, really.
Yeah.
One that I can't remember the titles of these three sections, but one is like the immediate aftermath and him kind of surviving
yeah.
and taking a tour of America.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets back and he says like, and he gets in his car and he's like, well, before everything breaks down completely, I'm going to mm-hmm. go across the country mm-hmm. and see like if is there still civilization mm-hmm. in New York. So
yeah.
he drives from the Bay Area.
Yeah.
All the way over to New York and back.
That's it's a big trip.
It's a big trip.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he gets a dog along the way. In fact, he says, I got a dog. And actually, the line is, actually, the dog got me.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite funny.
Yes.
And on the way, he actually finds two groups of people who keep doing what they were doing before the apocalypse.
Okay.
So he finds some people in New York who were just, you know, like socialites who would go out drinking and play cards with each other. And they just carry on doing that.
Can be
and
a choice.
He finds some cotton farmers in Alabama.
Yeah.
You know, like this black couple and their, you know, child or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep making cotton, even though there's no one to sell it to or whatever. It's just sort of like they carry on doing it.
Okay.
So this first section is a lot about what survives.
Yes.
And it's Isherwood, trying to be, well, here's my thesis statement about this book.
Yeah.
Is that this is, everyone has the fantasy of how would I do after the apocalypse?
Always. It's always, okay, what,
and I'd look
how
after
would
this,
I react?
And I'd look after that.
Mm.
And what this book is somebody who thinks he is, would be good and thinks that the apocalypse, like he would thrive, or he would become a new leader of the nation. He'd become an Adam or whatever it's going to be. Like, you know, he would become this like a founder of a new nation, a new founder. And he was going to like make sure that literature survives and science survives and all this other kind of stuff keeps going on.
Right.
But he's actually a bit dim.
Okay.
Like he thinks that, oh, if the apocalypse didn't happen, I would go on to be a professor. And it's like, no, you wouldn't. You'd be going on to be like
a lab assistant.
Yeah. Well, not even a lab assistant, just sort of like a working geologist or something.
Okay.
You know, he isn't very bright.
Okay.
He isn't very clever. But because the whole book is told from his point of view, you're kind of sucked into the fact that he just isn't very good. Like he goes down to the university library and sort of like, oh, Berkeley University Library, I better
you know, take some books.
Yeah, I better look after that. Like, I better make it sealed up. And then he just doesn't. And it just sits there for decades. Like, because, you know, this, the next section is like, you know, like a decade later, a year later, when he's like having children and stuff with the other people he's found.
Okay.
And he's just not very good. So his way of doing science, like of like working out what it is just kind of making lists. And this is one of those things that you understand that like scientists will think through a problem and come up with ideas and then rigorously test them and and advance knowledge.
Yeah.
And people who are kind of science adjacent say that they're science or that I'm doing, you know, I'm doing science on something. It's like, are you doing science or are you just making lists?
Mm-hmm.
And he is kind of more of a list making kind of level rather than actually doing science kind of level.
Right.
He's more of a, I'm going to write some stuff down rather than I'm going to organize some stuff.
Okay.
He's like one of these productivity people who just spends a lot of time organizing their to-do lists, but not actually accomplishing anything except reorganizing their to-do lists.
Yes.
That's the kind of person we're with. And the book works because you're always being lulled into the same sense of comfort. You know, like as a comfy apocalypse or whatever they say, a comfy post-apocalypse. It's actually really easy not to bother restarting civilization.
Yeah.
And so many of these books, certainly ones that came after this, were like, you know, all right, you know, civilization breaks down completely. And now these people are going to kickstart it. They're going to restart it. They're going to...
Something new.
Yeah, they're going to get together the knowledge. They're going to tour Shakespeare around, you know, with these plays. They're going to get people together and they're going to, you know, make sure that the postal work, you know, you know, the postman, like the postal service. And you're kind of like, restart America. It's like, yay, America. We're going to restart America by... you know, becoming a postman. Or we're going to restart America by touring Shakespeare. Or we're going to restart America by setting up a new religion and being strong men and, you know, setting up new nations. We're going to restart America by getting people out of the bunkers, you know, like the politicians or the people come out of the bunkers. It's all of that kind of stuff is the normal basis of what creates, you know, in these post-apocalypses, like what kind of can create the story and create the narrative and create the driving, you know, forward thrust of the novel or of the story or of the TV show or whatever it's going to be in these post-apocalypses. And this book, because I think it's so early, it doesn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Because it's like an early example of the, I'd say, the modern era of science fiction. Of course, there's other books as well. What's that? The you know, the play, I can't remember it, is where, you know, someone goes to the Arctic and comes down again. Is it a Robert London? No, what's the name? Anyway, I'd have to look up the book. Again, written in like 1910 or whatever it is.
Yes.
Has an idea of like an adventurer goes north, comes south, and everyone's wiped out. And that's more of like exploring a world, you know, an empty world. But this is on the cusp of, and like I say, kind of a template for people who will go, all right, this is what happens, this is the default, like what, like making lists of what survives, imagining a world of post-civilization or post-human civilization. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of like pigs will survive. Yes, pigs, because they're just like, they'll eat anything, go out. Pigs, no problem at all. Pigs all over the place.
Yeah.
Chickens, no, because chickens are like domesticated.
They just get eaten
by the foxes. And,
yes.
And cats do okay-ish, but not great, because cats, like...
I guess they become feral again.
Yeah, they become feral.
Yeah.
But then when humans aren't there to look after them, they get eaten by dogs. And then you're like, okay... So then there's two different kinds of dogs. Mm. Like there's the small, you know, terrier ratting kind of dogs, which eat the rats and things,
yes.
and they're good.
Yeah.
And then you get the bigger dogs, which can go in packs. But then all the kind of middle dogs, don't survive.
Yeah.
And then they're sort of like, how about lice? You know, human lice, pubic lice.
Mm.
Well, they have to have humans. And when all the humans go, the lice, like pubic lice and hair lice, just disappears because there's not habitat destruction, which we will talk about. But if the habitat is human bodies and all the human bodies goes, you know, pubic lice go extinct, and he's sort of like, and then there's ants, and then there's like because the human's not there, it throws off the balance of nature. So at some point in one summer, it's sort of like just all ants, and then after a few years, the rats come and the rats just take over everything because mm-hmm. at this point, and then the rats are eating rat, and it's like a big thing of the year of the rats, you know, as they're going through, they say what the different years
different cycles.
And then it also talks about what technology will survive. So they're like electricity, when there's hydroelectricity going, like it is in California, they're like, oh, the electricity carried on for ages and ages and ages until the dams broke and the water kept on being delivered because it's all gravity fed down to where it is in California, where he is. And then, but roads will survive, but only the structures, but then the roads themselves will break apart, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So it feels to me like we are mostly with him.
Yeah.
And he is mostly an observer.
Yes, he's not, and that's the whole point. He's not, an observer and a list maker.
Yeah, he's more of a passive kind of...
He writes, like, the story is about somebody who doesn't think that they're passive.
Right.
And doesn't think he thinks he is going to be solving the problems. Yeah. You know, he finds himself a wife, you know, somebody else in this, you know, in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And they get together and then there's some other people that they find and say, oh, yeah, you come over. And they all set up a little community there. And there's sort of like in the end, there's like six families or six couples. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say couples because one guy is there and they like, look, you can stay with us, but you need to go and find yourself. Like, if you want to stay here, you need to find yourself a wife because it's going to be weird if us two here as a couple. And those two people over there as a couple, and you're just like a single guy hanging out. Go away, find yourself like another survivor woman, and come back. And he goes away and he comes back with two wives.
Okay.
And there's sort of like here's wife A and here's wife two or whatever, you know. Yeah. And then he, for the rest of the book, he's just there with two wives and everyone. And you know, I remember we're saying this about like in the books from the 1970s, where it was like, what is the thing that makes that they assume is going to be the same all the way through in the and in this book, bigamy of like one man having multiple wives is always an eyebrow raiser. It's never not. It's sort of like, oh yeah, he's got two wives, yes, I always got to remember that. Whereas it's, and I think I also mentioned this with this, you know, Forever War or Gateway or whatever it is, where they have the main character have a relationship where it's like a mixed race relationship.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like a statement about it.
Yes.
And in this book, it does that as well.
Okay.
Is that the main character is kind of so dim, he doesn't realize that the woman that he finds is black.
Yeah.
Or, you know, or is either black or mixed race or something that in 1948 or 1949, when this book was written, that would be a huge, like a huge, huge thing, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's still illegal for a white man to... And so this book makes a statement about this guy. It's sort of like, well, after the apocalypse, it doesn't matter if you're black or white.
Yeah, there are no rules to be enforced.
Yeah, and that's this is the kind of interesting science fictional kind of idea, is that I do think post-apocalyptic literature is science fiction. It is speculative. Like, how does the world work if something's different? And in this case, everyone has disappeared.
Yeah.
So it's that's that kind of balance of like, oh, actually racism, we can be free of racism, but also there's that thing of like bigamy, and it's still like oh, you know, there's that base level of like bigamy, polyamory, like that racism doesn't survive the apocalypse.
Yeah.
Social structures of people raising eyebrows of a guy with two wives, that does survive the apocalypse.
Yeah. A black couple that still works on the cotton farms. It that feels like a statement to me. It feels a bit like, oh yeah, the people who, you know, who work there, that's their all they do.
Yes, but I think it's very clear in the book that he's saying the upper class socialites of New York are just as stuck in their ways as the black, like, plantation farmers in Alabama or wherever he goes through. I can't remember exactly where he was. He goes across like Route 66 and then a loop around. So I think that the book isn't saying that. But weirdly enough, like, it's quite progressive in that way, saying, you know, racism doesn't have to survive the apocalypse.
Right.
There can be a reset and it won't matter. Like, people born after the apocalypse won't understand what racism is.
Yeah.
However, this is using some of the language from 1949, and I'm like, oh, okay. I guess those were the words that they had to use there. And these days, we would have totally different words written.
Yes.
But I think the message that kind of like, you know, anti-racism progressive message is there right here in the text.
Okay.
Anyway, so.
I'm mainly saying this because previously,
yeah.
So in the past, I've read this book. I can't remember much of it.
Oh, yes. I forgot that you read this one.
So I went to the Goodreads page and scrolled through some of the reviews. And yeah. one of the review was by Jenny from Reading Envy.
Yeah.
And she wrote that it is, racism and sexism and...
No, again, I'm not saying that there's no racism and sexism in this yeah. book. I'm saying that the message of the book is for its time,
yeah.
progressive.
Yes.
In the same way that H.G. Wells could be talking about, like, in the future, we the workers eat the rich, which is like what
yeah.
you're saying.
Yeah.
And being super racist at the same time.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
like, again, it's difficult to, like, tease these things out. Yeah. Because, like, if you're writing a book and you're addressing race in 1949,
yeah.
it's going to be dated. Yeah. However... it's dated in, and this is different to those books, which I'm trying to find a book from the 1970s that we can add
yes.
to a science fiction book from the 1970s.
Yeah, yeah.
There, it's dated and feels weird.
Mm.
And this is like the language is dated, but the story and the vibe and the message feels like modern science fiction, even if some of the language is used.
Right.
You can't look past it.
That makes
so
sense.
So Jenny... can't look past the racism, sexism is in this
yeah.
book. I'm not denying that some of this is racist and sexist.
Yeah.
But I think there's enough in this book which makes it interesting to the modern day,
mm-hmm.
into
okay.
the modern day reader. And still, again, like a foundational text or an interesting text that this book was doing stuff that all of these other books can like assume
mm-hmm.
in the future.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
or if they're not assuming what this book is doing, they have to add something else like... Triffids
mm-hmm.
or, you
mm-hmm.
know, whatever, vampires, whatever it's going to be.
yeah.
For these books that I was just talking about that's
yeah.
written under
yeah,
here.
That makes
or be
sense.
More explicitly post-apocalyptic that it's nuclear that's
yeah.
going on. You know, we understand that there's going to be a nuclear fallout. Because
yeah.
in this book, it's still not quite sure. And the day of the Triffids is sort of like, yeah, there's a flash of light in the sky and then everyone blind. And you're like, that flash is very much a nuclear bomb going off that blinds
mm-hmm.
people. But it
mm-hmm.
was all over the sky. So was it a nuclear bomb in space? You know, there's these bits of speculation. Like, it's still a bit fuzzy what is causing these post-apocalyptics.
Yes, that makes sense.
So
in the context, in the historical context of this book,
yeah.
it has messages that
yeah,
go
I think
beyond
it's got interesting messages.
Yeah.
And I know it's weird to say this, that it comes down to like the title of the book, which is also the last words of the book, which is humans may pass away.
Yeah.
America will pass away.
Yeah.
Our social constructs will pass away,
mm-hmm.
but Earth abides.
Yes.
In other words, this is a story about, hey, if all the humans disappear, it's going to...
Earth is going to be fine.
There will be a plague of rats, and then there'll be a plague of ants, and then there'll be
yeah.
a plague of whatever.
Earth deals with that.
Earth will abide, and
yeah.
this is a And I think all of the stuff that makes this book good is that it's like written by someone who understands what they're doing. That the person, so who are we going to have as our viewpoint character? Having a geologist who normally thinks in terms of like millions of years, that's where geologists are going,
yeah.
and have that person like tracking the time, and they keep track of the time passing, each year passing, by carving
yeah.
something into rock. He's
right.
a geologist.
Yes.
He gets his hammer. The
yeah.
hammer becomes a symbol, like the geologist hammer, or the hammer that he uses
mm-hmm.
at the very start of the book, becomes a symbol of authority. And it's like the same thing that carves. So like all of the thematic exploration of this is sort of like what will humans do on a geological scale? And this book is saying humans... on a geological scale, where we chip away at some rock, but then Earth abides.
Yeah.
And the message of the book, the construct of the book, which is like what happens if someone experiences the future but is incompetent and can't restart civilization.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually what we need for this book. This is the kind of thing that we need for the book to work.
Yeah.
You know, for this story to be told. Because if it was somebody who was like, I'm going to restart civilization, and then was actually good at it, That, again, it's a different book when somebody is good at restarting civilization by setting up the U.S. Postal Service again.
Yeah.
Like, the story is fundamentally different.
Yes.
The hope in the story comes from competent humans, like, reconnecting with other people.
Yeah. Yeah, and in other books, like in The Postman and books where people have set up society again, people have fundamentally understood what is the basis of society, what is actually needed to bring people together, to, like, communication is important and education or whatever is important. This guy is an earth scientist and he's like somebody who studies rocks. And
okay, so here it is. Weakness. This is always the thing. The weakness becomes strength in these post-apocalyptic. So what's the superpower of being the last man alive on Earth? It's like, really helps to be an introvert. So here we have, like, this introverted person who's like, I'm going to be the dynamic leader in the future. And it's like, no, you can barely hold a conversation with people. There's a movie, Idiocracy, which is about the...
I've never watched it, actually.
No, again, it's with the current political stuff. It would be so weird to rewatch that now. But that's about, there are, like, you know, the military are, like, doing this, you know, this sleep testing stuff, and they're like, we need, like, a control person to go into the future.
Right.
And so they're like, here, this guy, and it's played by is it Luke Wilson? No, it's the other one. No.
I don't know.
Owen Wilson. Yeah, so it's Luke Wilson, the actor has played it. And he plays the most average person that they can find. I think he's a soldier. And they look through all of the records of everyone in the army.
And it's always coming to him.
His average height, his average, build, his average everything, including his average intelligence.
Yeah.
So it's a movie about someone who goes to the future, and the future is now everyone's an idiot because it's all the idiots. The idiots are the only ones who had babies, and all the clever people don't have babies. Yeah. So everyone in the future, I'm not saying...
It's
an unproblematic movie, but the whole point is that in the future, someone who is now very average in the future could become a leader, and all of the other survivors around him are other people who are quite dull and or not intellectual.
Like, now in Earth Abides.
In Earth Abides. Yeah. There are people around him who are... So he does become the leader by kind of being default, by, like, the only guy who's, like, ever read a book. Mm. And you're like, no, that can't be right. But no, in the future, if you actually just take the whole world and select people at random, they're going to be people who, you know, some people are good around people and some people aren't, and some people are happy and some people are not. And there's this... Again, I don't want to give too much away. I mean, it feels like I'm giving away the book, but no. What the book is about somebody who thinks he's going to be a dynamic leader. And like at one point, he's like, oh, the university library, that's all of the knowledge that we'll ever need to restart civilization. That's going to be we should keep an eye on that. We should keep that safe. That's going to be really, really important in the future. And I put a little asterisk after my note as sort of, library could be important later, asterisk. Isn't. And it's just, and now here's my issue. Well, not here's one. Here's something I'm going to be interested in about this book. So this is being made into a TV show.
Oh yeah.
The front cover of the audiobook.
Yes, I actually heard about this. Yeah. Isn't it like an Apple TV thing?
No, it's like, I don't know what it is, but let's type in Earth Abides here. Earth Abides by George R. Stewart. And the audiobook that I listen to says, oh, it's MGM. So it's soon to be a series on MGM. Now, here's the thing. The whole point of this book is that civilization doesn't restart and humans go back to being tribal, you know, and it's just... It isn't a... I know. What am I trying to say here? Like, how are they going to make a movie? I think what they want is this to be the new Station 11 / Walking Dead or something. I don't know. Like, The Stand, whatever it's going to be. And that there's a big pandemic happens and everyone gets wiped out. And here's what happens afterwards. And I'm like, talk about the most disappointing TV show you're ever gonna see, which is about a below average person being surrounded by even more below average people, like just about surviving by not learning to hunt. I mean, they do learn to hunt a bit, but they're in a big city and there's loads of canned food around. So yeah, they just spend
for
ages.
For their lifetime,
and they're like,
probably...
we should set up a farm. Yeah, we should probably set up farms. And they like set up a little garden. And then they're like, well, it doesn't matter if it doesn't work because we'll just go out. And all the kids are just sort of like, yeah, we'll do this bit. And he's sort of like, right, school time. And all the kids are like, oh, I don't want to go to school. And then he's sort of like, okay, we're not going to do school. And you're like, what? Oh, and that's like weirdly in the book, and that's like a moment of growth for the community to go like, actually, like everyone gets wiped out. And the people afterwards, what are they? And there's a moment where they're like, hey, because some of the people in this community are like religious and they're like, let's do a church service every Sunday. And at the end, one person just stands up and say, I think what Jesus would want is if we just don't bother with this church anymore. And you're like, and they move on. And then it says at the end of the book, we're past the last American section where, because he's the last person who was alive before the pandemic to then be around. And the last section of the book is called The Last American. Mm-hmm. And it's very clear that in the future, each one of these different places will have their own culture, will have their own religion, will have their own language, will have from just where they were set up. Yes. And it says, oh, and there's these people in Alabama who still every year make cotton and make an offering to their cotton god or whatever it's going to be like, you know. Yeah. So
because what happens is that the social constructs that serve the society for the state that it was in will slowly crumble down to the bare necessities, and until you go down all the way to rock bottom, and until people think like, oh, maybe I want to make my life better in a way that I couldn't before. By farming and hunting, and if these people always had access to the food preserves that were still there was not that necessity, so they didn't have to learn. So it was still on the downwards trajectory, basically. You know, the societies need to go all the way down until the point that people think like, maybe it's a good idea to, I don't know, learn how to ... You know.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, it's the big cycle of,
yeah,
do we really need that? Well, not at this moment, we don't know.
This is the strange thing about this book, is that the questions that it's asking are like foundational. Like, is humanity good? Like, there's not many. I mean, there are books which, you know, posit this kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, would the Earth be better off without humans?
Yeah.
And some of those kind of seem very like anti-human.
Yeah.
But I don't understand all of the questions being asked in this book. And I think it's because that's what literature is. Then this book is, you know, it is science fiction. It is speculative. But also it feels like someone is writing something which isn't about stating that.
Right. It's an exploration.
Yes, it's like questions and a variety of answers. Mm-hmm. Written from the point of view of somebody who thinks one thing and ends up doing another.
Yeah.
So there is there's this core ambiguity in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing that, you know, they say, you can say about the racism and sexism of this book, is that a lot of the main character is like operating in this like racist world, or like has these racist hangovers, like these racism hangovers. Mm-hmm. And the book is about him like letting go of that.
Mm-hmm.
Which again, it doesn't mean that there's no racism in the book. But also it's about somebody who thinks that civilization is good and slowly lets go of that too, you know.
And I think that is actually kind of a good answer to that question, is humanity good for the Earth or like in general? Because I think this question of you think one thing and then act opposite, or you go along with it, and then at the end it turned out that you acted completely against what you were thinking.
Like, you can say anything you want.
Yeah,
like you can everybody write whatever
can
you
say,
want.
Oh, and I would put myself in front of the trolley problem and save the three people. You know, this kind of like,
yeah, the intellectual trolley problem is one thing, and that's, I guess, what that is. So what I'm trying to say is this book is definitely staying on the SFBRP must reads.
Okay.
It's really good.
Okay.
And again, I kind of want to talk more about it, but I want to leave this as like a more spoiler free kind of thing. Like, it's an experience to read it, because you're being immersed. Mm-hmm. You're being immersed in a post-apocalyptic world without zombies, without triffids, without, you know, without the continuing, you know, whatever, like all the bad stuff, without mm-hmm. the mutants, without mm-hmm. all this other kind of stuff, without like the, you know, the strongmen, like fascist governments that arise in these different yeah. kind of things.
Yeah.
It's like without all
just
of that.
Just people who have to get by.
It's just people getting by, mm. which feels like there shouldn't be anything there. But it turns out when you don't have someone struggling against zombies or, you know, cannibals mm-hmm. or whatever there is mm-hmm. in some of these other books, and there isn't any of like the mysticism like there is with The Bear or The Road or those yeah. other books that I read. Yeah. And it isn't like more fantastical, like, you know, the, what is it? I Who Have Never Known Man. Or,
yes.
You know, these other post-apocalyptic, not many people left in the world. Mm. It's like, because it's so like based in this reality. Mm. But the reality that it's based in, because it's like 1949 California, it's a little bit more distant. So it feels, you know, that gives it some distance that it can survive, you know, in a way which is sort of like, oh, this book set in the 80s and a comet hits and, you know, and then like the white people, all the heroes, and the black people become cannibals. You're like, what? This is, it's, again, I'm talking about Lucifer's Hammer here.
Okay.
By Jerry Pornell or whoever it is like that. So you read that and go, ah, this racism is like, it feels like the author's racism, mm. like the American racism, mm-hmm. rather than it being like dealing with racism in 1949.
Yes.
And that's different from what we would have to do now, mm. where the racism would, like, the main character wouldn't be able to be racist in any way, mm. like that previous book we were just reviewing, Those Beyond the Wall, and would have to be getting it, like, they would have to get everyone's pronouns correct.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like, they can't, and this book is, like, distant enough from, like, all of the civil rights, all of these writers in the 1970s mm. writing in the wake of the civil rights movement era in the 1960s,
yeah.
where it feels like tokenism to put in, you know, a mixed race couple or mm. like a non-white character. Mm-hmm. And this feels like pre all of that, you know, so it feels like distance in a way, but not distance by adding in like anything like super science fictional or adding in anything like yeah. fantastical.
And it's that kind of addition can then sometimes feel artificial, and here it's just like nothing. It's yeah. just like, okay, humans yeah. are decimated, and then
so it feels a lot more human-like. Mm. And again, because it's written, I think, very knowingly from a person who could make a library survive and mm. could, you know, teach people how to read and mm. you know, and could find a new leader and a new whatever is going to be for yeah. the future.
I mean, he does do the trip across the country, yeah, and yeah. he goes back.
Yeah, he goes back home. So anyway, I there's these Indian rock parks. So I looked up and I was like, oh, I can do some geo-guessing here.
Yeah.
And I could work out just by the description in the book, the views. And I looked it up and I was like, oh, yeah, you can actually just see, because there's these what's called the Indian rock park. And this is the rock. So you can mm. actually find it here. Where's this? In Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's just set in this area here, in these walls around here, mm-hmm. and look for in Indian Rock Park. And I guess if you click on that, can I see some photos? Yeah, because they talk about the view over,
oh, right,
and you're
yeah.
seeing the Bay yeah. Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge. This
yeah,
is
a
it.
Good view.
And this is where they come up here. We're just looking on Google Maps here. They climb up these
steps.
They climb up these rocks, and this yeah. is where they keep track of time and keep track of the turning of the year. They yeah. put a mark and say, when the sun sets there, mm-hmm. it's the start of the
yes.
new, it's the start of the new year. And
yeah.
they name every year by, they don't count the numbers of the years. Mm-hmm. It's like
they name it what happens.
Yeah, the year of the dogs, the rats, the year
yeah.
of the
yeah.
the wind, the year mm-hmm. of the fires, the year yeah. of the whenever this person, the year
yeah,
of,
because numbers at some point become very abstract.
Yes. So yes, this is a book about people fumbling their way
yeah.
into creating a new society and culture
yeah.
of just a few families trying to make it work together. And I'll talk more about it to you in the spoiler zone of the podcast. And the spoiler zone is after we press stop, and
okay.
then we can carry on talking about some
okay,
of the bits
and pieces. Okay, that's good, that's good.
Yeah, I've got through all of my notes here.
Cool.
4.5 stars I'm giving it this time.
Okay.
Because again, I find it very effective
yeah.
and very affecting to me as
yes.
well. Like it's difficult for me to like get through a book like this and it not and not make me, I didn't cry or anything at this time, mm-hmm. but it's totally the kind of book where I'm like, ah, you know, like, you know, another book which has the year of this or the month of this, which is Piranesi, sort mm-hmm. of the year that the cormorants,
the pelicans,
yeah, the Cames of the Northwest Hall or whatever mm-hmm. is the year of that. And you kind of go, oh, that, you know, that feels like the last person in the world
yeah.
who is looking after some skeletons and mm-hmm. keeping track of things the year of this and the year mm-hmm. of that. It's kind of playing in the same space. And I wanted that book to make me cry, and it didn't, even on the second time I read it through. And but this is the kind of book that does.
Yeah.
Because it's about, like, an innocent character.
Mm.
Again, I don't want to just say, hey, if you liked Piranesi, you should read this. But again, it feels like these two books are, like, a very, like, speculative fiction, which is very... I don't want to say literary, but just yeah. well realized mm. and well written and well realized of the kind of thing that they're wanting to do.
Right.
So yes.
Cool.
Piranesi doesn't make the SFBRP must read list, did it? No, because I think it's fantasy. I don't think it's science fiction. I think it's very much fantasy. Either way, well, maybe we should examine that.
Mm-hmm.
Why isn't Piranesi on the SFBRP must reads list?
Yeah, I don't know.
Who knows?
Well, it wasn't for me.
Anyway, but, yeah, I know. It's not for everyone. Right, so that's it.
Yeah.
That's it. Thanks for listening.
Okay,
Happy
what's
New
the next
Year.
Book?
Next book? Oh, Alien Clay by Adrian Tchaikovsky. I said we'd do this watch along, this movie marathon thing where we would watch all of the Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
We're not going to do a podcast about
no.
it.
No.
Because we missed up, because we didn't do the first podcast after we watched the first movie. And then the second podcast after we watched the second
yeah.
one. And that's what we've done in these previous marathons.
But also our schedule didn't quite no. fit this.
And yeah, so.
And I did an extra marathon after you were gone. So, I watched all the extra
yeah. so
footage.
So we'll only do an episode about the Lord of the Rings movies
mm.
if 10 people message me or email me and say, I want to hear your thoughts on it, and we might do something. Otherwise,
okay.
I'm just moving on. We're just moving on
yes.
with life. We
yes.
did a movie podcast about Dune, so
yes.
let's move on with this. Yeah, so Alien Clay by Adrian Tchaikovsky, which we could...
Sounds good.
We can do that podcast.
I've put it on my library hold, and it's like still... It was a long list, 6 weeks of waiting or something. So,
do you want to just buy it and talk, and then you read it, and then we'll do a
yeah.
podcast episode,
oh, actually,
the two of us?
Actually, good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's very good.
I
don't think
that.
It's peak Adrian Tchaikovsky,
yeah.
but I think non-peak Adrian Tchaikovsky
it's
is still
good.
It's still, I think it's better written than most science fiction that I've read from the last few years.
Okay.
So yes, we'll talk about the review and I'll tell you some other stuff about it if you actually get the ebook and start reading
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's actually a good
that
idea.
Could be your next, yeah. That could be your next book. Okay, so that episode can wait. And then I've got some other books which I've started, which we'll get onto. Well, we'll do a podcast when we finish it.
Sounds good.
All right, so let's consider us all caught up. You can follow me on Instagram, not on Twitter or X, certainly not on TikTok.
No.
I've
on
never
Goodreads.
Been, never been, can become a friend. Also, Blue Sky. I'm on Blue Sky.
Okay.
There's an app called Blue Sky.
Okay.
And
Mastodon?
No, it turns out, look, in different communities congregate in different places.
Yes.
So we discovered this when we're doing the juggling stuff, is that in Europe and South America and North America, all the jugglers are on Instagram.
Yeah.
In Japan, all the jugglers are on Twitter / X or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so their kind of social media doesn't, there's not really a big crossover
mm-mm.
between Japanese social media, except for a few people who, you know, who post on both.
Yeah, that's true.
So it is quite interesting.
Well, let's see how that develops.
So in the world of, like, in my different hobbies and things like
yeah.
that, it turns out when it comes to, like, gaming, like mm-hmm. computer games,
mm-hmm.
it's everything's on YouTube
mm-hmm.
and then in private Discords and,
yes.
you know, different things like
yeah.
that. All the tech people left Twitter and went to Mastodon. So when I want to know about, like, links to blogs and other things as well
yeah.
and podcasts that I listen to that talk about tech and, you know, review tech and talk about culture and design and all
yes.
that kind of stuff, they're all on Mastodon.
Yes.
And it seems like the world of science fiction reviewers and discussion people
mm-hmm.
who I used to read on blogs and things, they're all now on Blue Sky.
Okay.
So it might, but so that's what I'm looking at on Blue Sky, is that Blue Sky might be the best fit for the Science Fiction Book Review podcast.
For that community.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mastodon, never found anyone who's, I mean, I know that some people have followed me on Mastodon.
Yeah.
But
there's no community interaction kind of.
Well, it's too difficult because it's all spread out. It's too difficult. Like, I'm on one Mastodon server and you're on a different Mastodon server.
Yeah.
So when I search for things that you, it like Search has just done the one. Either way, I don't care about it. Like, it's too difficult to go into.
Yes.
All of them have got the pros and cons. But here's the thing. If I'm looking for people talking about, like, and discussing and, you know, talking about science fiction reviewing and criticism, it feels like Blue Sky is the place to be.
Okay.
So I'm going to, over the next few weeks, or over the next, or over this current new time, I'm going to see if I can find more interesting people to follow so I can read more about, not more book reviews, but more things about, you know, book criticism and that kind of culture.
Interesting. Yeah, which, test it out. See how that works out.
Check me out, Luke Burridge on Blue Sky, or lukeburridge.social/bluesky. They're all terrible.
Whatever.
Either way, I'll put some. Maybe I'll put some links in the show.
There's always Goodreads and Goodreads.
Probably. You should really go and become my friend on Goodreads. So when I look up what you think of a book, like I do now with Earth Abides, overall on Goodreads this has got a 3.95 rating, and among friends, well, it never says, does it? So
not anymore.
So I rated it 5 stars. Carlex rated it 5 stars. Chris Kelly rates it 5 stars. Mikkel rates it 4. Kemper 4. Yeah, lots of 5 and 4 stars here as well. Yeah, Ziven rated it 5 stars. This entire review has been hidden because of spoilers. Let's click it. This book has aged, but the core ideas have not. I identify with Ish. He's an intellectual that overthinks things. Yeah, see, that's the thing. It's somebody who all he does is overthink, and he doesn't actually. This is, it's so crazy to read a book about like this, someone who thinks so much about everything and isn't actually capable of it. And it's like I wouldn't say it's the opposite of me, but it definitely.
Oh yeah, you get stuff done. I probably find myself in this very much.
But so many books are about the people who either underthink things and overachieve. But it's very rare to have a book which is about someone who overthinks things and underachieves. It's like, what's going on?
I mean, literally, listen. This could be like me suddenly in an apocalyptic environment, and I would have to make my way through it. I would suck so much. I would.
This is why
I always hope that if anything like this weird stuff ever happens, is that I hope you will be with me.
No.
Because together, we'll both
die immediately.
No, but
here's
I think
the thing.
We could...
How about a book which is the person who's our main character isn't very good at it, and civilization dies with him. Mm. He's the last American. Mm. And yet it's not a tragedy. It's actually hopeful in a way.
Okay.
And how can you read a book that is like, everyone dies at the end, and it's a good thing. It's not like it's good for Earth. It's sort of like Earth abides, Earth is, I don't know. There's just something about it, which again, this is what Ziven says. There is a future, but Ish's world dies with him. I found that to be a powerful message. You know, it's sort of like, I love a good apocalypse story. So it is an apocalypse, and it is a post-apocalypse, but it's like, but it's not cozy. It is cozy, but it's like hopeful, but also there is no hope, or the person they're with isn't. Anyway, it's a strange book. Again, it's dated. You have to put up with some language which wouldn't be acceptable now, and some social stuff which wouldn't be acceptable now. But like I say, at the core of this book, there's something I think quite amazing.
Some
and
interesting
affecting.
Questions.
Yeah. Interesting questions. And again,
it's being answered.
Yeah. Well, I'm not even sure there are answers. Mm. And if there are answers, I don't agree with them. But it is there is a powerful message. There are many powerful messages in this book and interestingly told.
Cool. All right, let's actually
wrap it up there. We've gone 48 minutes.
Yes.
Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.